Alrighty, welcome, welcome listeners, welcome to Friends to the Ends. It's great to have you on board, of course at Planet 104.6 FM. If you aren't listening tonight, which I suspect most people aren't, that you can stream it, or you can actually hear the podcast, because I'm going to give that a nudge on our Friends to the Ends Facebook page. So and we've got Simon William Todd. He's looking after buttons again. Thanks, Simon, for popping along and doing that.
Welcome.
It's lovely to have you. I took your advice, actually. You said last time you didn't want to be my friend anymore, and I needed another one. So that's why tonight I've got Tim Cunningham here. How are you going, Tim?
I'm well, thanks, Paulie. Thanks for having me.
Mate, it's so cool to have you here. I think we're going to learn quite a lot tonight, because our topic is kind of what, well, I've called it the guitar revolution, but it's probably a lot more than that, isn't it?
Well, we were chatting about this the other day, and I thought it'd be cool if we actually had a listen to some of the sort of seminal tracks that have been laid down over the years that really give some signature tunes and some of the cool effects and things that guitarists used back in the day.
And it's not just because you're a banker.
No, it's not. No. I also...
You're here. I'm sorry. I was going to finish. the other thing is that you're a very good guitarist. You've been in some bands, and you're a builder of amplifiers. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, look, I have always been passionate about building amps, and I found when I moved to the UK in sort of early 2000, I sold all my gear stupidly, and when I arrived, realised that the price of vintage amps was actually sky high, and I'd sold a small fortune, so I had to get into making them myself.
All right,
yeah.
So we're going to talk a bit more about that later, we're going to start probably where it all started from, really, and to tell us about this track. How High the Moon.
Well, I thought we could have a bit of Les Paul. I mean, Les Paul is a legend, not just for putting his name on one of the most iconic guitars of all time, but he was a real innovator and pioneered the early use of multi-track recording. This is a track from back in 1951 with his wife, Mary Ford, High How the Moon. And this is one of the first times that actually someone overdubbed his own guitars and also heard singing as well. So it's pretty cool.
Pretty revolutionary. It was a bit like, I played this to Simon on Wednesday night, and we're dancing in the lounge a little bit to this one. But,
yeah, get you going.
And of course he left his sunglasses, and he asked me to find them, and I said the only ones I could find were from Stevie Wonder. But anyway, we'll play this track.
It's a good story.
Here it is, Les Paul and Mary Ford.
That you love me, it's I love you. Somewhere there's music, how dare, how far. Somewhere there's heaven, it's where you are. The darkest night would shine if you would come to me soon. Until you will, still my heart, how high the moon.
Isn't it really? It sounded like the Andrews Sisters in the background.
Yeah, very cool. And he actually he's using a bit of slapback echo in there, which is...
Can we say that on the radio? But a
slapback echo, which is interesting. I mean, it leads us nicely into this new tune, next tune.
Yes.
Which has got Scotty Moore playing with a very young Elvis Presley at the famous Sun Studios down in Memphis. And he's using a very cool old funky amplifier called an Echo Sonic, which has a built-in slapback echo.
So this would have been, what, in the 50s? Would that
1955, I think, 55? This track. And, yeah, Ray Butts had made these amps, I think, in 53, and Sam Phillips was one of the first guys to get his hands on it, was sitting in the studio, and this is what they did, recorded with it.
And Johnny Cash would have been around that time as well?
Yeah, he was. There was a whole sort of troupe of superstars, Roy Orbison and the like, all performing at Sun Studios.
He's probably had a pair of Simon's glasses there as well.
Highly likely.
Okay, let's hear the King, shall we?
Yeah, Mystery Train.
Great.
Train arrived, 16 coaches long. Train arrived, 16 coaches long. Well, that long black train got my baby and gone. Train, train, coming round, round the bend. Train, train, coming round the bend. Well, it took my baby, but it never will again. No, not again. Train, train, coming down the line. Train, train, coming down the line. Well, it's bringing my baby, 'cause she's my own. Train, train, coming round, round the bend.
All right. Elvis, I mean, goodness me, what a voice. And it sounds like you're on a train.
Clippity-cloppity.
There was a little bit of clippity-clopping.
Yeah.
So
Elvis on rhythm guitar there too, actually.
Was he playing guitar in
Yeah, he was strumming along.
He always looked like he had a guitar, didn't know he could actually play it.
Yeah, he can play actually quite mean guitar.
Very cool. And what were we demonstrating there? What was that?
There was the use of the slapback echo,
yes,
which we mentioned.
We did touch on.
We did touch on that. very cool, built into the amp there, bit of an innovation. And it was one of the sort of earliest guitar effects, if you like. And another one, which we're going to look at next, is tremolo.
Sure. Tim, you keep
moving us along.
It's my show, but you just say what you need.
We've got to keep it rolling
about.
Along.
Great.
Clippity-clop.
Feels like he wants my show, Simon, just saying.
Tremolo.
Tremolo. Talk us through that. What's that sound?
Tremolo is basically like grabbing hold of your volume control and wiggling it up and down really quickly.
can you say that on the radio?
I'm not sure about that.
There's something about these early effects. They're all a bit dodged, but that's effectively what you get. It sort of goes up and down very quickly, and they built it actually into the amplifier.
So he's playing the guitar and playing with the knob at the same time.
You can do that, and Jeff Beck's very good at doing that. But in this cut, they're using an old Ampeg amplifier, which has the effect nicely built in, so he doesn't have to do the wiggly thing.
Okay, so to pick this one up, you've chosen because it's your show.
Please. Thanks.
Tommy James and the Shondells. And this is Crimson and Clover. Now, I honestly thought Joan Jett brought this one out in the early 80s, but apparently not.
No, 68, actually. It came out with Tommy James. And they use tremolo all over this. Even you hear at the end, he even plugs the vocal mic into it and sings a bit of an outro.
Does he? And yeah. He's trembling a little.
He is trembling.
All right, well,
more than Roy.
Well, let's have a listen to Crimson and Clover. Reverb on that. Sounds like
tremolo, boily.
Tremolo.
That's the tremolo example. Yeah,
they sound like he plugged himself in.
He did plug himself in. I think actually.
Did listen to anything he said.
I did. What I meant to say, he plugged his fingers in the power, not the plug into the amplifier. I'm just saying, it wasn't very, you know. Yeah. Didn't sound that good at the
they
end.
They did get very excited during the recording of that, and then when he did plug himself into the amp for that final little outro. Great use of tremolo.
It was a wonderful outro, cut short by whoever's on the music. But there we go. Who am I to say?
So we could keep going like that as well. Yeah.
Nice.
Much better.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Because I'm looking after the music. It's quite a bit of seriousness.
A lot of responsibility.
A lot of responsibility. All right. So, Tim, we're in your hands. So a bit of an evolution with the guitar. We're hearing some knobs going on, some tremolo going on, a bit of reverb. But where are we tracking to next?
Well, this is actually, we're going to talk a bit about reverb.
Right.
So these are actually effects being built into the amplifier. Reverb was actually, it was designed to try and emulate the sound of being in a really big room, you know, a big cavernous space. And when you're in a big room or in a canyon, you know, the sounds echo back off the walls and you get this kind of reverberated sound, and that's what reverb was designed to emulate. And it was first used in Hammond organs. Leo Fender was one of the first cats to put one actually into a guitar amplifier.
Really?
And he also had a very funky standalone unit built in the early 60s. And these were really latched on by some of the early surf guitar bands. When you dial it up to their extreme, you get this really splashy, washy, very cool sound.
And, of course, this would still be all in mono, wouldn't it, or thereabouts? Or was stereo starting to come through?
I think stereo is coming through now, but certainly some of these earlier recordings would have been mono.
So we've chosen, given the surfy sound, Pipeline by Dick Dale. I mean, tell us a bit more about this dude.
Well, Dick Dale, he was actually sort of renowned as the king of surf guitar, and he used to play sort of instrumental gigs, you know, lots of sort of student band halls and things. And, you know, he was picked up more recently by Quentin Tarantino using some of his tunes on Pulp Fiction and the like. So really huge again, but amazing guitarist. And he was renowned for just blowing up amp after amp. So Leo Fender, actually, some of the more powerful amps built were built for Dick Dale because he kept blowing them up.
Did he really? Because it reminded me a little bit about, because there's no singing, this is pure instrumental, a bit like the Shadows in England, but he's taking the Beach Boys surfing sound, but at a really ramped up level.
Yeah, exactly. And this track, Pipeline, I think that the Ventures recorded a version in 1963. This one has got Stevie Ray Vaughan as well, just for added good measure.
Well,
and I think they recorded this in the 80s for some movie, but it's very cool. So,
all right, well,
we need to dial it in.
Shall we play it now and see Pipeline by Dick Dale? It does sound Quentin Tarantino. I mean, Quentin just makes it sound cool, doesn't it? And that was a very cool track. Tell me, was he doing quite a lot of whammy bar work going on there? Sound like he was giving it a good a good going over.
Yeah, well, they do get stuck in. I think Stevie Ray, he usually likes to employ a bit of whammy, but Dick Dale himself, I think his strap might even be a hardtail. It doesn't have the whammy, but he sort of gets up and down the fretboard and really screams up and down.
Just winds it up. It's bloody cool.
I think he's also playing his guitar. He's sort of got everything strummed back to front and upside down. He's an out there character, actually. Worth checking out if you want to see some amazing footage of a guy cutting loose. Dick Dale, YouTube.
No, but is he still alive?
He died, I think, relatively recently, but he performed right till his death. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. I'm presuming that was in America, where he comes from, Dick Dale?
Yeah. In fact, I think everything we've listened to so far has been American bands playing through American amps.
So we need to pop over back across the Atlantic to some UK sounding.
Yeah, well,
music,
I mean,
right?
A similar time. You've got the sort of young, booming British music scene as well. But the local guitarists here, they had real trouble getting hold of the American amps. Were really, really expensive.
Of course.
Of course, they were locally made amps, Fox and Selma, but quite often they weren't as powerful as some of the stuff that the likes of Dick Dale was using. So Jim Marshall, who was a drum instructor, I think, but also had a music shop, he got hold of a Fender Bassman. It was an old late 50s amp, and he and his mate basically ripped it off. They made a copy of it and gave birth to the very first Marshall amp, which was the JTM-45. Very cool piece of kit.
Of course, and seen at the back of most, is it AC/DC concert? AC/DC had the stack of Marshalls?
Completely. I mean, the whole evolution of sort of the massive big wall of sound and a stack of amps came from these original Marshalls. That's why Jim was known as the Lord of Loud,
right.
I think, because of that. And he sort of pioneered the use of 4x12 speaker cabinets and those sorts of things. But this particular track coming up, young Eric Clapton, he got sick of lugging these big cabinets around, so he asked Jim if he could make him one that would fit in the boot of his car.
Right.
And so he made him what's now called the Classic Blues Breakers Combo Amp, which he used on some tracks with John Mayall and their Blues Breakers to record some of the sort of greatest guitar tracks laid down.
So we're going to have a little girl.
Yeah, Little Girl. There's some really amazing tracks on that album. Yeah. Hideaway is one that often gets played, but I thought Little Girl would be kind of cool because it's a little bit different.
Okay, well, why don't we have a listen to that? Well, he's got the volume up and given a good crack.
Yeah, actually, good point. He's got the amp fully dimed here. He freaked all the engineers out. He said he was unrecordable. They had to keep replacing them until a guy would actually find some mics that would work. So yeah, Les Paul, Marshall. Fully dimed, fantastic.
And with the maestro Eric Clapton, what more could you ask for? You're in guitar heaven. Here we go.
You've been through 18 years of pain.
great. I mean, crikey, that is just bloody good, isn't it? I mean,
amazing.
Isn't it? Just a great sound, and it sounded like Eric Clapton was singing, but it wasn't John Mayall's band. Was it him or was it the big boy?
I think it's actually John Mayall singing on that track. I know Eric does sing a tune on there, Rambling on My Mind, on that album, but John Mayall, I think, singing on that particular one.
Right, okay, so... I always thought it was a bit of a super group, but Peter Green, he came in after Eric Clapton, is that right?
Yeah, so John Mayall, I understand, he had this group, the Blues Breakers, and they got a whole heap of different guitarists came along and played. Peter Green joined, I think, after Eric. Eric went on to form Cream. But you had John McVie playing bass there, of course, also went on to form Fleetwood Mac with Peter.
Very cool.
Yeah, so there was a whole group of great guitarists sort of went through John's band.
It's a great sound. We're going to jump back to the US continent, but we're going down south. Down south. Going to have some Texas tea on this one, which is... Because we did have a bit of a change, because we did drop one out, didn't we? We dropped Stevie, because he was ready on the other one as well.
Yeah, we did realise that.
So we've decided to have a crack with ZZ Top.
Yeah, we thought we'd better have some Texas tea. I was lucky enough to spend some time in Texas hanging out with some dudes there when I was sort of learning to get into building amps, and they showed me the ropes. And we listened to a lot of great music. Stevie Ray Vaughan, obviously, he was playing, or had been playing as manager at a little roadhouse down where these guys used to hang out, and we played a few gigs. But ZZ Top, Billy Gibbons, was a big fan of these amps that the guys were making, Kendrick amps, they're called, incidentally. And so, yeah, we've got to have a bit of ZZ. They're rocking.
Then we got a bit of... And of course, you make amps, Cunningham amps. And this is like Happy Days amps, is that right?
yeah, something like that. Fonzie amps. Yeah, Cunningham amps, they're called. Billy Gibbons, ZZ Top, they use these little small tweed amps to get a massive sound, and that's what I sort of started building with the guys in Texas. And so, we've moved on to bigger and better things now, but I think it's a really great example of what a great sound you can get.
Well, LaGrange is one of my all-time favourite ZZ Top tracks, so we're going to give that a crack. And if anyone wants to know more about ZZ Top, there's a great documentary on Netflix. It just came out a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it's awesome. Little old band from Texas.
And, they're fantastic. So, if you can't stand up and play the air guitar on this one, there's something wrong with you. Here it is, LaGrange.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town, about the shack outside the game. And you know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls. We'll be right back.
It just brings a smile to my face. I mean, if you're going to have a driving CD or playlist along the road, you can. It's just one of those tracks that you just got to give it a good lashing, don't you?
You do. It's sort of you need the sort of Ford Coupe hot rod is even cooler. But it's just such a massive sound, three piece band, and they just sort of jump out of the speakers. It's awesome.
Yeah, after I think Simon nodded off. He said it got a little bit boring, but no, he was okay. He's with us now, which is good. We're going to jump into the 80s, and this is I thought it was my show, but it's not tonight. As you know, David Bowie is probably, dare I say, my most favourite artist of all time.
I do know that.
Yeah, I can't get past that. And Scary Monsters was the album for me that I found Bowie properly. And on that, I think I was 15 or 16, it was about 81 when it came out, somewhere around then. And Fashion was a song that was taken and played at most of the school dances. You had them walking along and being cool and, you know, the sound. But kind of what threw me was what Robert Fripp was doing to the guitar. Did you find anything out about how he made that industrial crankshaft sound of guitar going on? I mean, it's just amazing.
It is amazing. I had a bit of a look. I didn't know much about it, I have to admit, beforehand, but it was really cool trying to find out. Apparently he used to turn up to these sessions with like just a bag of effects, all different things, and those last couple of tracks we listened to, they were kind of using the guitars as effects, you know, just and the amps as effects,
yep.
You know, turned up real loud. But Fripp, he used to have all these crazy pedals, and I think even sort of early synthesizers and stuff he had put it through, and he used to just twiddle around with the knobs and mess around with stuff until he got a sound that he liked, and then he'd just blaze.
Mm. Well, I that's the best intro I can have around this track, and so why don't we hear David Bowie here with Fashion.
Robert Fripp.
Yeah, Robert Fripp. Listen to this. It's just dirty, grungy. Oh, graveyard sound.
The people from bad homes.
Oh, goodness me, that brings back memories. Memories of the boys walking around school at morning tea time, lunchtime, thinking we're pretty cool, doing the old beep beep around the place, as you do. And I think if you think about that song, if anyone thinks of a David Bowie song, they'll be beep beeping. What do you reckon, Tim?
A beep beep.
But what a great, great guitar sound.
Yeah, Robert Fripp, I mean, he's one of the great innovators. Crazy stuff. And interesting, I mean, he uses all sorts of modern profiling stuff now in his sound. He's always looked to advance, you know, be right on the edge of what he can use to, you know, add to the creative process.
Have you seen him live?
I haven't.
Wow.
King Crimson, we're playing last year.
Yes.
Didn't get
to see them?
No, some friends that enjoyed it immensely.
That's good. That's a bit of a shame you didn't get there. Yeah. And so we're going to jump back into the 70s, late 70s, actually. Russ Never Sleeps, Neil Young, I mean, the godfather of grunge, if you like,
yeah.
Dare I say. Would that be fair?
I think it is. He's probably the godfather of much more than grunge, I think. Mm. I'm pretty fanatical about Neil Young.
You know me.
I do like Neil Young.
He's your David Bowie.
Yeah, he probably is. And just some of the sounds that, you know, he's conjured up out of, you know, guitars and amplifiers, it sort of sent me on a bit of a quest, really.
And he enjoys a bit of, he's always been a bit of a frontier experimental kind of guy, right? Right from when he started.
His time with Devo and artists like that, I mean, they're completely off the wall. Wacky, crazy stuff.
Exactly.
They seem to fit right in.
And then he was also knocking around with Pearl Jam as well. Mirable was another album that we actually toyed with to put on the set list, didn't we?
Yeah, it's a great album. He's got an ability to sort of just meld with different artists. And I mean, there's stuff with, you know, Crosby, Stills and Nash, phenomenal.
I nearly bought Deja Vu today, but I didn't. Yeah. It was quite badly scratched.
Yeah, and his own band, Crazy Horse, who, you know, he's been around with forever. I mean, he's a bit of a chameleon when it comes to bands. But his sounds, they come again out of these little tiny old Fender tweeds, 50s tweeds, and he's actually got this really cool custom thing called a whizzer that sits on top of the amp, and it actually goes down and turns the knobs of his amp, so he's got a big foot switch out in front of him, and he stomps on a switch and it changes the knobs on his amps to turn it into something. You know,
so he doesn't have to twill his knobs at all then?
No, he doesn't. He's got this machine to do it for him, which is very cool.
That's cool.
And it's called a whizzer. I mean, how apt.
Well, he also, just before we crack into this, he also developed this new kind of streaming cool sound or high fidelity stream music as well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I can't remember what the name of it is. But he did. He's fanatical about the quality of sound, which is why he uses, you know, mostly analog gear. It's all really old school. He's got an old Fender Reverb, a massive battery of amps. And on this track we're going to play, he's also got this really funky piece of kit called a Mutron octave divider.
Talk us through that.
Well, it's basically, it takes the note you're playing and it plays an octave above and an octave below.
At
the same time, yeah.
Wow.
And it just gets this massive, big, fat, crazy sound with his amps on Meltdown and the Mutron on. You get, you know, my, hey, hey.
But you've clearly got the fire brigade in readiness before the Meltdown occurs with these, the amps going off.
Yeah, he has to have fans and shit blowing in behind to stop it actually catching fire.
So this is Hey, Hey, My, My. Now, this is the second version of Hey Hey My My on Russ Never Sleeps, because he has a slower version. And
it's
then
an acoustic one.
Yeah. Yeah, and then what he does with this is what he just says.
Oh, he gets Crazy Horse in and they just they lay waste, yeah. That's exactly what he does.
I think we should give it a crack then. Let's hear it.
We'll be right back.
Oh, wow. There's we nearly got the... what? It was it finished, Simon. Just saying. There was only going to be a little bit of clapping on the end of that one. Just saying. But it was a great, great track, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, any last words for Neil on that one? I mean, it just grabs you, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we're rocking out here listening to that. I mean, he really does just lay waste. It's awesome.
Very cool. Okay, so we're going to jump forward to the 90s.
Early 90s. I mean, he's the godfather of grunge, as you said.
Yeah.
So why not have a bit of grunge? Smashing Pumpkins.
We love Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, different kettle of fish, really, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
And when I was kicking around in the early 90s, it didn't necessarily grab me back then, but it's one of these bands that you sort of go back to and realise that actually they were doing some extremely cool stuff. In this one, they're actually uses a thing called an electroharmonics big muff, which is a... that's an effect.
I genuinely don't think you can say that on the radio.
It's an effect that's been around for some thousands of years.
I'm sure
But in the... this is a late 70s version.
okay.
With an op amp in it.
Yes.
And he says he was looking for a really sort of Black Sabbath sound. And he uses it to great effect on this track.
He is a gifted fucker, Billy, isn't he? I mean, in the nicest possible way.
Yeah, he's crazy. I think he's one of these fanatical guys who gets in the studio and he will layer up hour upon hour, track after track to get the perfect sound. He's kind of visionary and he's just... He's fanatical about getting the right sonics and sound, and he gets a tone on this track, Cherub Rock, which is pretty special, some off-the-wall stuff.
All right. Well, why don't we listen to Cherub Rock? Crikey. I mean, what more could you ask for?
Well, Jimi Hendrix. That's what I want.
It's exactly right. He's going to be our last track for the show. So
okay, I'll wait.
Just No. You finish it off, mate. can I just kick this one in just for when we get older and we're around the retirement fireplace, mm-hmm. talking about the old days? You did buy me this album, not this album. What was that one that had little wings on it?
Axis Boulder's Love,
which was a concept album. An Alien Invasion, I think, was kind of the concept of it. You gave it to me, and it was at a time where I needed to have a little bit of collective thought, and I went up to the beach and thrashed it for 2 days, and it was very special. And of course, this is a live version. So, tell us what Jimmy's doing here before we wind into it.
Well, Jimmy, as you said, I mean, he's the real deal. He does everything. He was using whatever he could get his hands on at the time, I think, in terms of technology. He had people modifying his gear, modifying his effects. You know, he's got a Stratocaster into a Vox Wah, which gives this really sort of vocal sound. He's got a Fuzz Face, which is his kind of distortion unit. Then he's got this funky thing called a Univibe, which he gets these vibey, splashy, crazy stuff going on, and then he's Jimmy into a wall of Marshalls. It's just impossible to beat what he does. So why not close out with some of the absolute master?
And the best part of this is it's live, so there's no studio pokery or shit like that. It is just Jimmy doing what he does best. All right, Jimi Hendrix, Little Wing. We'll be right back. Okay, thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, Tim, for popping along tonight. It's bloody great to have you. And you've an encyclopedic knowledge of music. I love it.
Thanks, Paulie. Hey, really awesome to come along and yarn with the boys. Loved it.
Very, very cool. Thanks, to Simon, of course, doing the buttons and that. And love your work.
Cheers, Simon.